Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us this morning. Interim Police Commissioner Kevin Davis spoke with Sheila on the first part of today's program about the need to get guns off of city streets. He tells us that just this last week, 45 guns were removed from circulation, 159 guns in the past month. He says that's up, you know, quite a bit, 150% or so since the last time. So he's certainly got this very much on his mind, and efforts to enact legislation in Maryland to accomplish that goal have been, compared to many other states, actually quite successful. Maryland has some of the toughest gun restrictions in the country, but those who oppose tighter restrictions on registering and owning firearms would point to the fact that tough gun laws have not seemed to retard in any way the tremendous spike in gun crimes that Baltimore has experienced in the last few months. Nationally, we seem to revisit the issue of gun legislation in the aftermath of each new tragedy that occurs. The recent shootings in Lafayette, Louisiana, and Charleston, South Carolina, like the murders in Newtown, Connecticut a few years ago, prompt a conversation about guns that eventually peters out and leads to no substantive change in the status quo. Ferment de Brabander is my guest this morning. He's professor of philosophy at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and he asks a basic question in his new book entitled Do Guns Make Us Free? Democracy and the Armed Society. He'll be speaking about the book tonight at the Pratt Library. Ferment, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
So the short answer to the question that you ask in your title is no, they don't make us any more free. And you defend that position in a way that's interesting and different than many advocates for gun control. You write that they are often in the unenviable position of advocating for greater gun safety by curtailing personal liberty. Yes. What is your approach to the argument?
Well, yes, my approach is to point out that in a society where we have an abundance of guns, and we're talking somewhere between 270 million to 310 million privately owned guns in America, and in a society where we have an abundance of gun-friendly laws and loose regulations, our freedom is going to be progressively endangered. And in my book, I look into, you know, discussions of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and how those will be endangered thanks to the proliferation of guns. I consider the campus carry movement, which is a movement across the country. I think about 9 to 10 states right now have this, where they allow guns to be carried by people with concealed carry permits in college campuses. And as a college professor, I try to imagine what that's like, having guns in the classroom. I do not believe that the prospects are positive for free speech in the classroom. And there were cases where people carried guns to protests in the past few years, and the impact of that was rather chilling. So I don't believe that the NRA is correct when they say that guns equal freedom. They may bring freedom at a certain point, but after another tipping point, which I think we're well past in the society, guns do not make us free. They compromise it, and they will progressively endanger our democracy.
So you talk about guns as the central struggle of our democracy. Is there a distinction between freedom and security?
I mean, in philosophically speaking, yes, there is, but we need to feel safe in order to be free. And the irony is that the NRA and the gun rights advocates argue we need ever more guns to feel safe, and yet the opposite is happening. The more guns we have out there, the less safe we are, the less free we are.
Maryland has a limit on the number of handguns that you can buy in a month. You're allowed to only buy one.
Mm-hmm.
It has, as I mentioned, some of the toughest gun laws in the country, although
right.
You point out that there are many, many loopholes
sure.
Here in Maryland. What do you say to the folks who say all these tough gun restrictions don't do anything to curb crime? I mean, the argument, of course, is that criminals don't register their guns
right.
Anyway. Why should anybody?
Well, it's a preposterous argument, because we are surrounded by states with loose gun laws and plenty of background check loopholes. Private citizens can get their hands on guns very easily. In a society with 300 million privately owned guns, it's not hard for anyone to get their hands on guns. So no matter how strict jurisdictions gun laws are, they're always in danger when they're surrounded by, you know, jurisdictions that have loose gun laws. And I'll give as a case in point Chicago. Gun rights advocates always say, well, look at Chicago. They have strong gun control laws, and they have, you know, tons and tons of guns and tons of shootings. Well, you know, as a police chief over there has pointed out, they're surrounded by jurisdictions that do not tamped down on the number of guns that flow very easily into the city of Chicago. So that is a very difficult battle to fight so long as we do not have a federal or national approach that will restrict the number of guns out there and will enforce background checks. We're not enforcing background checks for these guns. And as long as that happens, guns can get in the hands of criminals very easily. It's as if the NRA wants these guns to get into the hands of criminals.
How do you account for the fact that, you know, 80% of people say they support background checks, for example, particularly after the Newtown massacre
right.
in Connecticut? You know, the president made a full court press about at least that part of gun legislation, and then it just fell apart?
That is the central question that I have about this book, which is, why is it that if you ask people about individual measures of gun control, like universal background checks, how they, you know, a majority of people, even gun owners, will say they are in favor of them. And then if you turn around and say to them, but how do you feel about gun rights? They say, oh, I'm all in favor. How do you feel about gun control? I hate it. The interesting thing about the gun rights issue is that it has become a casualty of our political polarization, I believe, and our culture wars at the time. If the president is in favor of gun control, then his opponents are instinctively against it. And even though so many people are in favor of background checks, there has not been the sufficient willingness or power behind the movement. And that's the problem, is that the gun control movement seems to be lacking that kind of passion that is matched on the other side. And with my book, I hope to start a movement or start the conversation that people who are in the middle, who favor these gun control measures, might be made aware that these measures, you know, that our situation is sufficiently alarming and that we need to throw our support behind gun control in the same way that the few that are in favor of gun rights throw their support passionately behind their movement.
Well, Ferben de Brabander, I appreciate your coming in. That's all the time we have, and have a wonderful time tonight at your discussion at the Pratt.
Thank you, Tom.
Ferben de Brabander, he's an associate professor of philosophy at the Maryland Institute College of Art. His book is called Do Guns Make Us Free? Democracy and the Armed Society. He'll be speaking about the book tonight at the Enoch Pratt Central Library at 6:30 up in the Poe Room. It's part of the Pratt's Writers Live series, and we've got information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Coming up Friday here on Maryland Morning, a history of bluegrass music in Baltimore. It's a rich and deep history, believe it or not, and we'll talk with the historian Tim Newby, and we'll listen to some rare recordings. We hope you can join us on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.
Maryland Morning is an original production
of Your Public Radio,
WYPR, in Baltimore.
The show is produced by Johnny McCone
and Connor Graham.
We have production help from
Christy Forrest
and Scott Seiss.
Nathan Sterner directs and engineers.
I'm Tom Hall.
And I'm Sheila Cast. On this day in Maryland history, 1974, Cass Elliott, better known as Mama Cass, the voice of the singing group The Mamas and the Papas, died in London. She'd been born Ellen Naomi Cohen in Baltimore just 32 years earlier. Overweight her adult life, she died of a heart attack, not, as rumored, from choking on a ham sandwich. We're back on Friday. Please join us.